Eile fikudei hamishkan mishkan ha'edut asher pukad al pi Moshe avodat halvim biad itamar ben Aharon hakohen. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Pekudei, which is also Shabbat Shekalim, which is also Mivorchim Chodesh Adar Sheni, which is also Mochar Chodesh, which also has the distinction, not ordinary, of the announcement of Rosh Chodesh, which will be on Shabbat morning in Israel, will be said after the Molad will have occurred. So instead of the usual HaMolad Yichye, the new moon will be, we will say HaMolad Haya, because it will be shortly after midnight between Friday night and Shabbat morning. But that's a detail we could get to later if we actually do. We would like to usher in the Purim month, Adar Sheni, with some festive music. I have a recording of a shir I gave to the folders yesterday on the topic, which I would like to share with you. And we will do a whole bunch of other things as well. And in the meantime, let us do, or I didn't tell you, that recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 27th day of Adar Rishon, the first Adar, 5771, on the secular calendar, the third day of March, and since the second day of March was my brother's birthday, happy birthday to him. Kaf Dalid, the 24th of Adar Rishon, was also his birthday. So Yom Holedet Sameach, both a little bit late, but always with love and affection. Okay. Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shima Vekoli, Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot Lekol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmorya Adonai Miya Amod, Ki Imacha Hasalicha Lema'an Tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi ladonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed vaharbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziem mitzara lirvacha u'meyafela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. After a Purim song, we will play the recording of the shir yesterday, and then we'll see what we have left for the rest of the show. Listen and learn and enjoy. This is really a train of thought that started from the fact that Parshat Shkalim, the first of the four special parshiot this Shabbat, is a commemorative. It is not a mitzvah in itself to read Shkalim. It is our practice, our requirement, to read a special portion called Parshat Shkalim in order to remind us and to commemorate the mitzvah from the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Contrast this to Amalek. Zecher, Parshat Zochar, in 2 weeks from now, is a mitzvah in itself. One of the 613 mitzvot is to remember what Amalek did by the reading of Parshat Amalek. So there's a qualitative difference between reading Parshat Zohar, which is the mitzvah, and reading Shkalim, which is a reminder of a mitzvah which we don't have today, between the Beit HaMikdash and the Beit HaMikdash. That's the first part of the thought. Then I started thinking about how many things that we don't have, mitzvot, that we don't perform because we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, that there's hardly a reminder of. Or reminders come in different forms. Sometimes it's a passage in the davening, especially in the section called Korbanot, which a lot of people skip, and even those that say it mumble through it, and there's something to be said about that, but not now. Focusing on Shkalim, there are two things, not one, which we do to remember the mitzvah of Shkalim. One is the reading of the six pasuk passage from the beginning of Parshat Ki Tisa about the collection of the half silver shekel, the silver half shekel. And the other is the custom to give to tzedakah, zecher l'machatzir ha-shekel, commemorative of the half shekel. That's done usually before Megillah reading. People come to shul, there's a table in the back of the shul with plates and boxes from different educational institutions, because the custom is to give it usually for yeshivot, but not always. And that particular custom, just to mention it, is to give a token, half coin of the realm. So when you lived in the United States, you gave a half dollar, zecher l'machatzir ha-shekel. In Israel, we not only have a half coin, but the half coin is called a half shekel, so it even is a nicer commemorative. The minhag developed, I don't know when, to give three half shekel coins, because the word teruma l'ashem, a gift, a contribution, a donation to God, is mentioned three times in that pasuk that deals with machatzit ha-shekel. So the custom developed not only to give one half shekel, but three half shekels. Then there's another custom, which some people have, and I wrote about it in Torah Tidbits, to give the equivalent of the original silver half shekel. Based on various sources, the original half shekel was about 10 grams of silver. 10 grams of silver, at today's prices, I calculated, come out to a little less than 40 shekel. So there are some people who will give a total of, let's say, 40 shekel this year. Last year was only 20. The price of silver has doubled in the year. And some say that's in addition to the three half shekels. Some say you just subtract the shekel and a half and you give another 38 and a half shekel, so to speak, and you total it up. But that's beside the point at the moment. The point is that our tradition has two different commemoratives of the mitzvah of half shekel. That thought led me to the fact that when you have a commemorative, a reminder, it's not enough to just do it. You have to use it to remember. In other words, if a person ties a string on his finger to remember something, then what goes along with that is not only the tying of the string around his finger, he has to remember why he tied it there. If we read Parshat Zachor, you almost don't need that because it's the reading of Zachor, which is the mitzvah. Of course, there are things to remember and lessons to be learned and messages to receive. But with Shkalim, it's totally pointless to just read it and listen to it read unless it triggers in your mind a whole set of memories. Now, what that means to me is that there are elements of the mitzvah which we had in the past and will have in the future, but do not have in the present, that still belong to the present. In other words, you get something out of the mitzvah of half shekel when you do it, and you get something out of it when you remember during that period of time when you can't do it, like now. So the next step in the train of thought, obviously, is what do you get from it? Now, I don't know if this is the most important lesson or it's the first lesson, but it's one of the lessons. The fact is that it is a symbol of Jewish unity. Everybody gave the half shekel, was required to give the half shekel. Let me qualify that. Men were obligated, women optional, but it was taken from women if they offered it. And if a woman gave once and did not say, I'm doing this b'li neder, she's committed to do it. Fathers, even today, will give on behalf, in the token, not the real machatzit shekel, but the token of machatzit shekel, will give on behalf of their children as well. And that custom also has to be continued if it's begun without saying b'li neder. But the point is, or one of the points, so maybe it's not the first one, is that we have an explanation as to why Parshat Shkalim is read in the beginning of the month of Adar. Now, let's go back a step. The first reason is right out of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Be'echad ba'adar, on the first day of Adar, Mashmi'in al Hashkalim. They would announce the Shekel time. Meaning, announcements all over the Jewish world, to get your half shekel ready. In the olden times, that meant taking your cookie jar where you had your pennies saved up and going to a money changer and changing a certain number of pennies for a silver half shekel coin. What's interesting about it is that you can't give a shekel coin and say, I'll take my change. Or two people can't come and say, here's a shekel, it's for both of us. You have to give a silver half shekel. And in the word half is part of the message. Half means part. It means I am not the whole thing. I am part of an effort. I mentioned the other day in a shiur the Aron, the ark in the Beit HaMikdash. Its measurements were 2.5 amot by 1.5 amot by 1.5 amot. Half, half, half means it's not a total thing by itself. It's connected to another part, and that other part is the Jewish people. And in the case of Machatzit HaShekel, the other part is your fellow Jews. You, a wealthy person, cannot go and say, here's a sack of silver coins. I'm giving this for Machatzit HaShekel. You want to donate money? There are plenty of funds in the Beit HaMikdash for donating money. You want to contribute to the Machatzit HaShekel? One half shekel. He'oshir lo yarbeh, v'hadal lo yamit, mimachatzit ha-shekel. A rich person can't give more, a poor person can't give less. Now, many people think, oh, I know why, because they count the half shekels, and then they know the census, the count of the population. Not the reason. Because if that would be the case, then women wouldn't be able to give half shekel, because that would distort the numbers of the standing army, which was the purpose of the count. Obviously, all you need to do is keep records. Mr. So-and-so gave 10 shekel, somebody else gave 18 shekel, somebody else gave a couple of pennies. You could do that and still count the people that way. But the point was that equality thing. I gave an example, and it's still my favorite example, of a pinch of salt. The silver shekel fund in the Beit HaMikdash, which, by the way, was collected in Adar because the financial year begins in Nisan for the Beit HaMikdash. The fiscal calendar starts in Nisan. So they have to have a fund to purchase the New Year's korbanot and the wine and the flour and the oil and whatever else they need in the Beit HaMikdash. And that's why it was done in Adar. Now, before I forget, the other aspect of Adar is brought in by other sources, is the fact that it's related to the Purim story. Not just were the Shkalim collected during Adar, which is why we read Parshat Shkalim at the beginning of Adar, but it has a Purim connection. Haman goes to Ahasuerus, and he says, there's a people scattered among your provinces. It's not worth it for you to let them live. I want to kill them, and I will give as a gift to the royal treasury 10,000 silver talents. Our sources say that a talent, in Hebrew, kikar, of silver, was equal to 30 shekels of silver. 10,000 times 30 is 300,000. 300,000 shekel means 600,000 half shekels. Follow the math? 600,000 is the traditional number of Bnei Yisrael. It's not even a number. It's a term for the multitude of Bnei Yisrael. 600,000. The actual first census was 600,000 and another 550. So it wasn't even exactly 603,550. But 600,000, Shishim Ribo, is the term that is used, not meant accurately, but it's the term that is used to represent Klal Yisrael. Haman, the wicked Haman, wanted to destroy us, claiming that we were no threat to the king because we did not have unity, because we were scattered all over. And he was willing to pay 600,000 half shekels. Ding, 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 rings in your mind. We read 2 weeks before Purim about the 600,000 silver half shekels that we gave in fulfillment of a mitzvah, that we gave as a sign and symbol of Jewish unity, to put a lie to the Hamans of the world. So that's the other reason why Shkalim is read at the beginning of Adar, and what I'm saying is, these thoughts must be part of the process of Shabbat Shkalim, because that's why it's there. It's only a reminder. It's not a mitzvah in and of itself. Why do I take a lulav and an esrog and a hadasim and a ravot on Sukkot? First and foremost reason, the Torah commands it. You want to know symbolism in it? Fine. You want to know reasons? Great. You'll study that. But the main reason is it's a mitzvah. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with the rest of yesterday's mini shiur. Hopefully you're still holding that thought from the first part of Torah Tidbits audio for Pekudei Shkalim. And here is the rest of the mini shiur, and then we have other things in store. When it comes to Parshat Shkalim, the main reason that we have it is to remind us of the mitzvah of Shkalim in that period of time between Beit HaMikdash when we don't have that mitzvah to perform. Therefore, you got to think of the whole thing. Here's another fact that you should be aware of, especially in conjunction with Parshat Pekudei, where there's an accounting of how much gold, silver, and copper was given to the project of building the Mishkan. And Vayakhel last week, and Teruma a number of weeks ago, where we see the command to the people, not really a command, the request to the people to donate whatever they want, whatever their heart dictates, to the Mishkan, gold and copper and all the other materials were whatever you wanted to give. Silver was regulated to the half shekel coin, even that first time. And in the beginning of Pekudei, there's an accounting of what was done with it, and almost all of it went to the silver foundations, those foundation blocks of the Mishkan. And that's very significant, that particular material, which everybody contributes equally, be used as the foundation upon which the Mishkan was built. What was built on top of it, what was put into it, were vessels that had gold and had wood and had copper and fabrics, and those were all however much you wanted to donate. But the foundation, emphasize foundation, what everything is built upon, that was built from silver, which A, was untainted by that which tainted the gold, namely the golden calf. Silver came out okay with that. And it was equally shared by everybody, which has a message and a significance by itself. Okay, that was a nice song to usher in the Adar, which we will bench this Shabbat, but not the greatest to introduce the sad note, which I am going to share with the listeners. I'll get there in a moment. Let's just talk a little bit about Rosh Chodesh benching. As I've been talking over the last number of weeks, this year is a Shana Me'uberet, an intercalated year, sometimes called a leap year, although that term really doesn't show it from the Jewish calendar. It's a borrowing from the secular calendar. One way or the other, we have two Adars this year, both of which are supposed to be joyous, but it's only in the second Adar which we have all of the Purim-related stuff. The Mishnah says, Ein Bein Adar Rishon L'Sheni Ella. There is no difference between the two Adars except for what turns out to be everything related to Purim, which is just about everything. So it's very hard to find out what the two Adars are identical with. In fact, as I've mentioned, the Vilna Gaon's approach is that on a Yortzeit, for example, which has nothing to do with Purim, that takes place during a regular Adar should be observed twice in each of the two Adars, because there is no difference between the first Adar and the second Adar, except for Mikra Megillah, the reading of Megillah, and everything else related to Purim. Okay, leave that aside. We are coming to the transition Shabbat, where we announce Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni will be tomorrow, Sunday, and Yom Sheni, Monday. We do not, we meaning Ashkenazim, do not take note of the fact in the Haftorah that would have been Mochar Chodesh, whenever the Rosh Chodesh is Sunday or Sunday and Monday, then on the Shabbat we preempt the regular Haftorah with the special one for Erev Rosh Chodesh called Machar Chodesh. This time that's been preempted by Parshat Shekalim, and therefore some communities, I think mostly Sfardi or Ashkenazis who borrowed the custom from Sfardim, read the first and the last verses of the Mochar Chodesh Haftorah after reading the Shekalim Haftorah. Ashkenazim, as I said, who stick to their rule book, do not read those two psukim, and the day remains Erev Rosh Chodesh, but not the traditional Mochar Chodesh, which is a reference to the Haftarah. With that said, I would like to, I'm going to mention the fact that a couple of hours ago, we had a funeral from a very, very, very fine lady, one of our all-time greatest Torah Tidbits folders, one who was like the queen of the folders or the captain of the folders, the one who for a long period of time brought that group together and took charge without being officially in charge of the group. But her wonderfulness goes way, way beyond her Torah Tidbits folding. I'll mention one thing. I should mention her name also. Karen Singer, Aleha HaShalom, passed away last night after a gallant battle with a disease, and was buried on Har HaMenuchot. Our condolences go to husband Yehuda, to son Yaakov and his family, and the other children and their families. We don't know them. We know Yaakov, and we wish them the best. It came as a blow to many people here. Karen was very loved. Just one example, she never forgot a birthday or an anniversary or any other special occasion, not just of her family, but of her wide circle of friends. I would guess that she remembered birthdays that people didn't even remember of their own. But she followed it through with a homemade card, computerized, which she had delight in laying out and finding graphics for it and choosing personalized, not just boilerplate, happy birthdays, but something that was appropriate and specific to the person. I really, really have much more I would say, not now. I would like to play for you the learning of Mishnayot, which we did before the funeral, and then we actually arranged for a minibus to take most of the folders to the funeral. And last night, when I found out how bad the illness had progressed, I printed up Tehillim, which we were going to say this morning, with the folders, and it sort of switched into Mishnayot in her memory and Le'ilui Nishmata. Let's leave it at that, and here is that learning of Mishnayot. With your permission, all good people in the world have lost one of their own. and all Jews have lost a good one. And the Israel Center family has lost a beloved sister. Yesterday, when I heard of Karen's comatose condition, we printed up some Tehillim to say this morning. And I didn't know what to write at the top, because at that point, you really don't pray to God for a refuah shlema. So I wrote just Tehillim Lema'an, on behalf of Karen. And this morning when I heard the news, I'm switching to Mishnayot to learn in her merit and in our merit. Specifically choosing a timely Mishnayot, and especially one that if Karen was sitting here at my right, she would get a kick out of it, and you'll see the punchline when I get there. It's Mesechet Shkalim, Lekrat Shabbat Shkalim. Right at the beginning, it says, Be'echad ba'adar mashmi'en al hashkalin va'al hakilayim. On the first of Adar, announcements were made all over Israel, all communities, about two things. Shkalim, which is why we read Parshat Shkalim on the Shabbat Av, or right before Rosh Chodesh Adar, and about Kilayim. Kilayim is a specific combination that's prohibited in fields. I'll describe it in a minute. The Mishnah continues. B'chamishasar bo, on the 15th of the month, korina tamigilah bakrachin, we read the Megillah in walled cities. Today that means Yerushalayim, plus a whole bunch of other places that read it on both the 14th and the 15th, out of Safek, that they had a wall in the time of Yehoshua. Yerushalayim is the only city that is definite walled city, and we read and observe Purim only on the 15th of Adar, not on the 14th. But many cities around Israel read Megillah on, with everybody else, so to speak, on the 14th, night and morning, and again, without a bracha, they read Megillah on the eve of the 15th and the day of the 15th, because they might have had a wall, and it's not just might have had a wall, it's might have been on the location of a city that had the wall, or maybe not. In other words, is Be'er Sheva near the original Be'er Sheva? Is Ashdod near the original Ashdod? It's question. They read without a bracha, but their main Purim observance is the 14th. Yerushalayim, our observance is the 15th. Umitaknin et hadrachim, another thing that was done during the month of Adar, was repair of roads. The assumption being a rainy winter which devastated dirt roads all over the country. And now with the approaching spring and the approaching influx of people to Yerushalayim for Pesach, the roads underwent maintenance and repair. Ve'et harechovot ve'et mikvaot hamayim. And mikvaot, not like our modern mikvah, which is impervious to bad weather, outdoor mikvahs that were dug in the ground need repair and replenishment also. Va'osin called Tzorchei Harabim, and in addition, month of Adar was general needs of people, and I would imagine that means making arrangements for hotel rooms and bed and breakfast and extra food available and clothing and all kind of souvenirs, whatever, for people who came to Yerushalayim for Pesach. Umitzayinin et hakivarot, and you mark graves. This goes back to the time when headstones were not necessarily used on all graves, but some of them were painted with whitewash, and they needed replenishing after the rainy season. V'yotzin af al hakalayim. And in addition to making the announcement about kalayim, mixed plantings, I'll explain in a second, they also went out during Adar, and I'll explain what that means in a moment. The most serious, cross planting of the vegetable, the plant world. There are other prohibitions, but the most serious one is called Kalai Kerem, the mixing of a vineyard with a grain. Now, many farmers took advantage of the fact that grapes grow above the ground, and underneath the vines there was soil that they also planted wheat. That's forbidden by Torah law. Not only is it forbidden by Torah law, the wheat that grows in the presence of grapes is forbidden, which means that if somebody does it and mills flour and bakes bread, the bread is treif. The wine pressed from grapes where wheat grew together is treif. Not only is it treif, there's really no way to know. You can't look at it. It looks the same. So you need to, quote, trust the farmer. But not quite. Because there were farmers in Israel, just like today, who are not so religious and don't care. And there was this danger that they would circumvent or violate this prohibition. Or, to be less cynical about it, it could have been inadvertent. A farmer had been raising grain, wheat, barley, whatever, for a couple of years in his field. This year he decided, he read a book about soil erosion and depletion of minerals, crop rotation, like we learned back in fifth grade, I remember, social studies. That's why the cotton plant in the South ruined their economy after being such a bumper crop, because the soil couldn't handle it anymore. In came the peanuts to rotate the crop. And similarly, that's what farmers do all over the world. So picture a farmer who's been raising wheat in his field, and he says, you know, this year I'm going to plant grapes. So he plows his field under, over, whatever you call it, and no wheat, and he plants his grapes. Comes the beginning of Adar, announcements are made to all people raising grapes, go out and check your fields, check your vineyards, see if any stray wheat from last season, which you got rid of and you thought you harvested anything, there could be seeds that took root now, and now Adar is the time where you'll see the green shoots coming up from the ground, uproot them. That was the announcement made in the beginning of Adar. During Adar, inspectors from Sanhedrin go around the country to check the fields, the vineyards. So Mishnah Bet says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Barishona, originally, Hayu Okrin Umashlichin Lifnehem. They would uproot these shoots of wheat that were growing with the new grapes and throw it in front of the balabayit and say, you should have been doing this, not waiting for the inspector to do, like a little reprimand. However, Misherabu Ovre Aveira, there were a lot of people who didn't care. So what if my field has a prohibition of Kalai Kerem? I don't keep Shabbos, I don't eat kosher, so you want me to worry about shoots of wheat that are growing in my vineyard? Now, why should we worry about it? We have to worry about it because those grapes are going to be sold to the local winery. They're going to make wine. We're going to be drinking their wine. So it needs inspection. When the Sanhedrin realized that there are many people who are flaunting this halacha, remember I said before, cynical versus could happen to anybody. If it could happen to anybody, then when you see it in the beginning of Adar after the announcement, you'll uproot it. If it's still growing in the middle of Adar, it means you're flaunting the halacha. That's what the Mishnah calls Misherabu Ovre Avera, when there were a lot of violators of the Avera. What they do, Hayu Okrin Umashlichin Al Hadrachim. They would uproot the shoots and throw it into the public street, meaning embarrass the guy, because people would pass by and see a pile of wheat shoots. They'll know, he wasn't taking care of this field, and he didn't care about halacha, and a little more of a slap in the face. Didn't work. Because there were still people who said, why should I do the work? the inspectors are going to come from the Sanhedrin. Let them do the work. So they came up with a final plan. Hitkinu sheyihyu mafkirin kol hasodeh kula. They gave empowerment to the inspectors that if they find wheat growing among the grapes, they put up an official notice on the fence of the field. This field is now ownerless. Anybody could come in and take it over. It's hefker. That's a power of the state. That you don't laugh at. If you run a risk, if a non-religious Jew runs a risk of losing his restaurant because he's playing games with kashrut, he's going to be honest about it. And if you go into the supermarkets today, you can ask to see, they have large loosely folders, the klaserim, of letters from rabbanim all over the country, the fields in such and such, the orchards in such and such a place are under my supervision, that the fruit there is not suspected of being orla, that trumot and masrot have been taken, and this is to the benefit of the kosher consuming public. This concept, though, of going from a slight insult to a little bit of a pachin ponim to making their fields ownerless just shows you how that fear of government can keep a person straight. And this has present-day applications. In the United States, when Reb Moshe Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, had paskin that you're allowed to drink cholov akum, stam cholov, milk that was not cholov Yisrael, he based it on the fact that a dairy farmer in the States who plays around and mixes anything into his milk is going to get a huge fine slapped on him by the government. And you don't play around with that. When a company knows that it could get sued if there's a little tiny residue of a milk product which is now in their pariv product, kashrut-wise, they couldn't care less. But if somebody has a serious allergy and it can be traced, an attack can be traced to their product, they're in big, big trouble.
Oh, can I ask you a question?
And on that note, with recognizing that we have mixing of joy and sadness, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, and a very joyous one at that. Lehishtamea.